Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, they say there's a plan. I don't know that it's set yet. I don't think they've quite reached it yet. I, like you, am still scrambling for the details. But we're trying to find out the details of the bailout plan. And we've got a lot to talk about today. I only have my hour, but I'll be going into the next 3 hours with subbing for Bob Kincaid. So we got a lot of time to talk about this bailout plan and what you think about it, what I think about it. I'm unsure. There's no question that the Democratic plan is better than the one that the Treasury Secretary originally proposed. I mean, Hank Paulson's original plan basically made him dictator, gave him $700 billion to spend as he pleased, and said there should be no review and no oversight. That one clearly ain't going to happen. But the Democrats have been negotiating for a better plan. Now, many of you will say, well, why do we have a bailout at all? And I'm sympathetic to that. I really am. And the reason I'm of two minds about it is, I'll be honest with you, I have a lot of respect for my old boss, Congressman Barney Frank, and he seems very persuaded that some kind of bailout is necessary. Not for the Wall Street folks, but for, oh, I don't want to overuse an overused metaphor, but the Main Street folks, that otherwise people won't be able to get loans for cars, won't be able to get mortgages, that credit will dry up in America. And I have no doubt that's what he's being told by the administration. But, I'm not so sure how true that is. There are a few things I like. One thing that's clearly true is that the plan that's being proposed now, and it ain't a signed deal yet, is far better than the original plan. Not just because of oversight. For one thing, it ain't $700 billion. Congress is making $250 billion available, so they cut it down substantially, with another $100 billion, if necessary, they can get without additional approval. So basically, it's $350 billion. There are limits on executive compensation. They include things to limit golden parachutes. Democrats want to allow bankruptcy judges to modify mortgage terms, which I think are very important. And it's still not clear that some of the Republicans are going to sign on. Now, look, Republicans, if you're going to commit political suicide, if you're asking the Democrats to commit political suicide, you better come along for the ride. George Bush went on air last night and terrified everybody. His goal was to terrify everybody. And as a Democrat who sat through all the terrifying after September 11th, some real, some imagined, some hyped by the president, particularly those Iraqi WMDs that didn't exist, I'm wondering how terrified we should be. I am quite skeptical, shall we say. But then I got to say, and part of it has to do with, working with these people that I respect. I respect Barney Frank. I respect Chris Dodd. I considered voting for Chris Dodd for president. He was out of the race by the time it got to me in Virginia. These are very smart people. They know something of what they're talking about. And I'll add one more thing. And that is that Barney Frank wasn't tricked by Bush on the Iraq War. I know. I was there. When Bush said we need to rush to war, Barney said, what's the rush? He said, we need more information. He voted against the authorization, the same authorization that Hillary Clinton and others voted for. So Barney Frank has a skeptical streak. So part of me says, you know what, sometimes when I don't know exactly what's going on, and I fully admit I don't know exactly what's going on, I don't know that anybody does, whether it's Treasury Secretary Paulson or the people on Wall Street or the banks or the members of Congress. But when I don't know what's going on, I have to sometimes go by people I trust, and usually I trust Barney Frank. But I'm still not convinced. still not convinced. I need more convincing. I need to watch this more carefully. And the politics of this, are crazy. I mean, you have John McCain doing his typical gambling streak, right? The same guy that can throw tens of thousands of dollars on the craps table hoping for a lucky roll of the dice. I've talked about McCain's gambling habits. Well, he's gambling again. Rushing back to Washington. Oh, no! We've got to have Obama and me here! Why, John? Are you not ready for your debate tomorrow? Does John McCain not understand how the Senate works? I mean, I could help him out. I was only in Congress a couple years, and he's been in the Senate 26 years. You'd think he'd understand how it works. When you've got a difficult bill, when you've got virtually any bill, what do? It goes through the committees of jurisdiction. It goes through Senator Dodd, the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee. It goes through Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. And they talk to their committee members, and they get a draft going. And when it's an emergency like this, they work together, they agree, and they talk with the ranking Republicans, in this case, Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama and Senator Spencer Bacchus of Alabama. Excuse me, Congressman Bacchus. And they work out something, and they talk with their leaders, in this case, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, and they all get together, and then once they agree on something, they push it through with the other members, and the other members can make suggestions. They can occasionally offer amendments when you're not rushing something through. But it's the chairman of these committees and the leaders of the chambers that they do all the work, or 90% of it. I know that's how it works. Well, here's a little tidbit for those of you that don't know. You probably all do. Neither John McCain nor Barack Obama sit on the Senate Banking Committee. So at the end of the day, the only thing that really matters, if they have amendments, they can offer them. But you know what? It's an amazing thing. We live in a very electronic world. I can get a draft of the proposed bill pretty much as quickly as any senator can. In fact, the senators can get it more quickly. As soon as a draft is worked out, even before it's shown to the public, all Obama has to do is call Senator Dodd. Frankly, all McCain has to do is call Senator Dodd. All they have to do is call Senator Dodd and get a copy of the bill. And when they get a copy of the bill, if they want to amend it, if they want to change it, if they want to comment on it, if they want to criticize it, guess what? You don't have to live in Washington, D.C. to do that. You don't have to travel to Washington, D.C. to do that. Believe it or not, we are past horse and buggy land. It's no longer necessary. We have things called fax machines. We have things called the Internet. Remember that great invention of Al Gore and others? Why do they have to be in Washington? As Barack Obama said, as president, you have to learn how to do two things at once. But as president, you also have to understand, as Obama surely does, humility. Understanding when something is your responsibility and when it isn't. Sometimes I think when we have things going on all over the world, we need to recognize that they are other countries' responsibilities. If Europe will act, then let Europe act. Terrific. We don't need to act. The same is true with the Constitution of the United States. If the Supreme Court is about to render a decision, it's their decision. If it's legally within their jurisdiction, leave them alone. If the action is before Congress, as it is in this case, then it goes to the committees of jurisdiction, and it goes to the leaders of the Congress, and they negotiate with the President of the United States and his people. That's how it works. And McCain and Obama can add their 2 cents, just like any one of the 100 senators that may or may not be in Washington. Ted Kennedy is very ill, but he can add his 2 cents too without ever stepping into Washington. But John McCain's campaign was in trouble. John McCain's campaign was hurting. John McCain saw Obama pull ahead by, depending on the poll you read, anywhere from 2 points to 9 points. Now, to be fair, it's probably only about 3.5 points. I don't want to exaggerate. That's the average. He got nervous. He did another Hail Mary pass. That's what John McCain likes to do, you know. He got nervous when Obama was ahead before, so he picked out a certain, self-proclaimed pit bull with lipstick to change everything around. It did work for a week or two, till people realized she was a fraud, till people realized that this self-proclaimed person who doesn't like earmarks actually had supported so many of them. I want to talk, though, about the details of the bailout bill, and I only got a short time with my guest, so I want to bring him on really quick. His name is Robert Weiss, and he's someone who has fought Wall Street for many years as a trial attorney because of things like these security derivatives, these complex things that are frankly dragging down our entire economy. Robert Weiss, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Are you there? I'm told we may have phone problems by our technicians. Robert Weiss, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you now. Terrific. Let me ask you this. I know you don't have much time, so when you have to go, you just let me know and you can beg off. But I understand you've been fighting some of these excesses. That's pretty much your whole career.
Right, that's true. I've been fighting these guys my whole life.
Tell me, I know you don't have much time, who these people are, what they're doing, and how they're ruining the economy. I got 5 minutes. Go.
It's basically power. It's powerful people.
Okay, but these are investment bankers mostly, right? Did I lose you? Yikes. I'm told we had phone problems with the connection, and so I apologize if we've lost our guest. If we can get him back, Robert, if you're there, just speak up. If not, then I'll just keep talking. Yikes. That's too bad. He sounds like a really good guest and a very knowledgeable guy. I'm hoping I'm hoping we can get him again. I know Agnes is trying. All right. If we can bring him back in, we will. Otherwise, let me just move on with what I was saying before. What I was saying is
Hello?
That McCain... Oh, you are there. You are there. Terrific. I'm afraid I lost you there.
No, it's me.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't hear you for a little bit. Please, go ahead. Tell me. These powerful people, they're mostly in investment banks. I'm sorry, listeners. I'm sorry, Robert Weiss. Whatever phone connection you're on just isn't working. I don't know why, but I can't give people silence. So I think we'll just have to move on. If I know Mr. Weiss had to go somewhere. If there's a way that he can call in again, I'm sure Agnes will let him know how to call us in. But otherwise, we have to move on. As I was saying. John McCain liked to gamble. Now, I talked about this months before he chose Sarah Palin. I talk about this in my video resume. If you go to my website, by the way, I got a brand new, beautiful website, radioinsidescoop.com. If you haven't been to my website lately, please check it out. It's really nice. We did a lot of hard work on it. You've got radio shows there, TV shows. The chat room is there. You can, of course, listen live. You can comment on each show. I can read your comments on the air. Please check it out. But on my website, you'll see something that says About Mark. It's underneath the On the Air sign on the right-hand side. And if you click there, not now, but after the show, you'll see my old video resume. It's not that old. It's about 4 months old. Dates back to about June. 3 months old. And in that video resume, I talk about the difference between the gambling habits of Barack Obama and the gambling habits of John McCain. And they're very interesting, particularly as I talked about it long before Sarah Palin and this strange debate brinksmanship that John McCain's playing now. Here's how they gamble. it's amazing to me how much it fits the personalities of the candidates. But we know that Barack Obama is a poker player. He doesn't play for thousands of dollars or hundreds or even tens. According to his friends, he plays for nickel dime. Heck, that's less than I play for. But he plays nickel dime poker, and he's known to be a very careful, considered poker player. The kind of guy who thinks carefully about each and every move, looks around, weighs the situation, gathers the evidence as a poker player would, looking at everyone, figuring it out, and then he makes his move. Deliberately, he moves forward. In fact, we're told he's the same kind of basketball player. Someone who is not overly aggressive, someone who's willing to pass the ball when that is the right thing to do, to pass the ball. But when it's his time to play, when it's clearly his lane, it's hard to stop him. Amazing what game playing tells about people. John McCain is exactly the opposite. Here's something you should tell your friends, because it's really gotten very little coverage, except on my show. I mean, you can find it. I'm not making this up. If you Google John McCain and gambling and Barack Obama and gambling, you'll find all this, but probably not the New York Times, Washington Post. Some more obscure sources. But not just, you know, liberal ones. These are Republicans. We'll talk about McCain's gambling habits. John McCain likes to gamble. Loves it. Loves the thrill. This is a guy, let's face it, who was known in his younger days as a party animal. The guy who only made it into the Naval Academy because of his father and grandfather, but didn't happen to make the top 10%, the top 30%, the top 50%, the top 70%, the top 90%, the top 95%, or the top 99% of the Academy. No, he was in the bottom 1%. He wasn't even at the top of that. Less than 900 students, and John McCain is 894. In fact, he tried to do as much as he could, but just not being kicked out. Never studied, partied all the time. Maybe there are biographies about him. Check it out. I ain't making this up. Then, when he's in the Navy, he's a pilot. He crashes not once, not twice, not three times, not four times. He crashes five separate times. Now, you know, I'm not saying they were all his fault. But five times? Maybe John McCain took some risks he didn't have to take. We all know what happened at time five. We all know of his stay at the Hanoi Hilton, where he, like many other U.S. POWs, was brutally treated. He was not treated the worst, but he certainly was mistreated badly. Before he went to the Hanoi Hilton, he was married a young model, very pretty woman, had some kids. He came back from the war, and just like he had been through misery, so had his wife. She had had an awful car accident, really gruesome, one that almost killed her. The accident was so severe that she literally lost 5 inches off of her height. She was disfigured. She gained a lot of weight. John McCain found his love for her had gone, even though she waited for him all those years in prison. Cheated on her dozens of times, including with Cindy McCain, the heiress. I think John McCain liked the thrill. He's not the only one, right? Bill Clinton certainly cheated on his wife. John Edwards cheated on his. I found that pretty disgusting, too. And I like John Edwards. But John McCain likes a good thrill. And yes, let's get back to gambling. John McCain loves the craps tables. Having 6 or 7 or 8 homes, who could count how many? John McCain certainly can't. You know, when you have two, three, even four houses, usually you can count them. But once you get over four, it's just so hard to remember. But a man with that much wealth, man with that many houses, and where does his wealth come from? It comes from his father-in-law. Doesn't come from his hard work. Doesn't come from his wife's hard work. It comes from his daddy-in-law's work as a beer distributor. And he doesn't conserve it. He doesn't say thank you. He throws thousands of dollars on the craps table. Thousands of dollars on a single number. Then he rolls the dice. And lo and behold, if he wins, he wins. And if he loses, he loses. Sounds a lot like those people ruining the economy, right? They do these risky gambles. And if it succeeds, they make a lot of money. And if, in Wall Street's case, if they don't succeed, they still make a lot of money. But McCain is a gambler. Sarah Palin was a gambler. And this whole silly debate fiasco was a gamble. A gamble that the Americans would think that John McCain really was dropping everything to come save the country. It wouldn't realize the fact that, as Harry Reid put it, we're doing fine without you. Is John McCain's vote needed? Probably. He can fly in for that. Might he be needed to convince some wayward Republicans? Okay. We have telephones for that. Does he need a face-to-face with the president photo op when people are trying to do some hard work? I don't think so. And that's what Barack Obama said. Until McCain twisted Bush's arm and said, hey, after all the junk you did to me, I need you to invite Barack Obama personally because he won't be able to say no to the current president of the United States. And he didn't. And there they met today, and there they got their photo op, and rah, 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 thank you, John McCain. You, if anything, you slowed down a work in progress that was doing just fine. And no one seems to know what you've contributed. John McCain wants to cancel tomorrow night's debate. Cancel the debate until this bill's done. Oh, and if you need a time to do it, well, there's a debate with Sarah Palin and Joe Biden next week. Yeah, next Thursday. Yeah, the same vice president that he's hiding from the media. The one that he won't allow answer any questions or go off her talking points or be anything other than a trained monkey. When I say that, I'm not insulting Palin, I guess, so much as McCain. He won't allow her to be anything but a trained monkey. As Campbell Brown said on CNN, stop being so sexist. Will she wilt like a flower? Let the lady speak. But he doesn't want her to speak because he knows she doesn't know anything. So now the plan, according to John McCain, we'll just take the Tuesday one. We'll cancel Friday. We'll throw away the vice presidential debate, and Obama and I will go then. And Palin won't have to ever, ever, ever appear before the American people and answer tough questions. And I'm doing it all to save the country. It's a gamble, all right. But a gamble, I'm proud to say, that he looks like he's losing. The great majority of Americans, and I'm not just talking about Obama supporters, recognize it's all a stunt. Even a number of Republicans recognize it as a stunt. Even Republicans in Congress will tell newspapers off the record it's a stunt. Everyone knows John McCain ain't doing nothing about that bill. He's just trying to save his own campaign. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Kevin, my man, how you doing, guy?
Good. Hi. Hello?
Hello, hello. Welcome.
Hello, can you hear me?
I hear you fine. I hear you much better than my other guests. I don't know what happened to him, but he's gone. We gave up on him. You, I hear fine.
Okay, great. Oh, by the way, I got to communicate with you offline, if you don't mind.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what you do. Anyone who wants to communicate with me offline, Kevin, you and anybody else, on my website, radioinsidescoop.com, just click email Mark, and that email goes right to me and nobody else. So just
No problem.
In general, and if people need to talk to me on the phone, we can even sometimes work that out too. But that's just a great way to get in touch with me.
Okay. I just want to say Well, he can't hide behind that anymore because they came to an agreement. So he has to show up at that debate tomorrow.
Well, the agreement's not, I don't know that the dotted line is signed yet, right? I mean, here's the thing. I think McCain will be looking to save face to back down. Obama absolutely did the right thing, and actually the thing that the great majority of Americans think, which is go through with the debate. And listen, if they need to change the debate slightly, Bill Clinton is absolutely right. Right now, it was on foreign policy. That's the deal that they made long before the bailout. And obviously, national security is affected partly by this economic crisis. So, devote some of the time to the bailout. Absolutely. And frankly, that's good for Obama because then he'll have half a segment on foreign policy, half on the bailout. The last one will still be on the economy. And everyone seems to think that Obama will do better on the economy and McCain will do better on foreign policy. So good for Obama. This will help him.
But the thing is, even foreign policy, the Republican regime has failed on that.
Well, I completely
agree. It's a more dangerous world now than it is 8 years ago.
Well, no question about it. And I think Obama is ready. He's been practicing. He's prepared. I read one New York Times story to suggest that John McCain wasn't even preparing. This guy, McCain, really is. This is, I guess, the main thing I'm trying to get across this hour and the next three. He's erratic. He's impulsive. I mean,
well,
he's someone
arrogant. You know,
he's a gambler. He's someone who rushes off. I mean, I know Kevin. You probably know people like this in your own life. I know I do. You know, family members or colleagues or friends, the kind of people who they say, oh, it's a crisis, and they run off to face the crisis before they have any idea what they're going to do. You know?
Yeah.
The kind of person who says, oh, there's a fire, and starts running, and don't realize that they're running right into the fire because they haven't looked around to see where the fire is and where the exits are before they start running. That's John McCain.
Yeah, absolutely right. But also, another thing, any pilot that crashes five times, especially the crash that he did, which killed like 100 and something people, I believe he would have been bounced out of the Navy. He got over on that one.
Well, his father was an admiral.
Yeah.
Grandfather.
He would have been bounced out of the Navy. It was
The one that killed 114, I hate to be fair, but I will do it anyway.
Yeah.
But my understanding is, and if you have a contrary understanding, Kevin, lay it on me. Send comment, put links on my comment sheet for today on my blog. But my understanding is another plane hit him on the one that killed 114 people. That one he didn't cause, I don't think. But if I'm wrong, by all means, show me, and I'll look up the source and report it if it's confirmed.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's a different story. Then. But
yeah,
I'll
tell you where my source is. I saw a profile of the candidates way back when. I believe it was on MSNBC. It could have been CNN. And both profiles of Obama and McCain were very positive. I think they were trying very hard to be truthful and accurate, but at the same time, be inspiring for both, and both candidates have led some inspiring lives. I don't want to take that away from either of them. But in there, they talked about that accident, which I believe is the worst naval accident, one of the worst in U.S. history since Pearl Harbor. But what they said happened is that some missile, like a runaway missile, hit his plane. Now, maybe his plane was in the wrong place. I mean, maybe he had, I don't know. But I don't want to accuse him of something unless I have a little more,
little more
facts.
Well, I even give McCain the break for graduating bottom of his class. I don't care what place he graduates from the academy. It's still a hard place to go through. They don't just give you it away.
Well, they do if your dad's an admiral and your grandfather's an admiral. I mean, there's a reason why he wasn't.
Well, even so, I say he still had to do the push-ups and do the drills and do guard duty, stuff that a regular college student would not be doing.
Maybe so. But to me,
in all fairness,
those physical things are not, I mean, look, some people find push-ups easy and studying hard, right? Some people find studying easy and push-ups hard. This is a guy, John McCain, who blew off all of his studies and, in fact, was known as the partier on campus.
Yeah.
Troubled numerous disciplinary things. Now, again, it's many years ago, but my point is it shows a personality trait. My point is not to condemn him for what he did in the Naval Academy 50 years ago. 50 years ago.
50. 50.
50 years.
More like 60.
More than 50 years. No, excuse me.
50 plus.
Back in 1723. No, okay, more than 50 years ago. But that's not my point. That's not my point, and I want to be clear about that. My point is that certain people have certain personality traits that you see go on and on throughout their life. Not that people can't change. Sometimes people can. But I don't think John McCain can help it. I'm not even saying this is conscious. I think there are people who are risk-averse, and there are people who are risk-lovers. And we all know them, right? People who are risk-averse are the kinds that get extra insurance, right? They got the fire insurance, they got the flood insurance, they got the special insurance, you know, whatever. They're the people who don't gamble a lot of money or don't gamble at all. They're the people who get to the airport 2 hours ahead of time. We know these people. You can be too risk-averse, frankly. And then there are the risk lovers, the gamblers, the people that like the thrill of doing something suddenly, impulsively, erratically at the last minute and seeing what happens. Let's scream fire and see who shouts. You can go too far in that direction. And what's striking to me is that Obama and McCain are complete opposites. I mean, for all we talk about their policies, and we get there, and all we talk about their their biographies and histories and all that, what's fascinating to me is this personality trait. Obama, to me, is the classic, careful, considered guy. He's the kind of guy who doesn't make a decision. If someone says, Mr. President, what do we do? He says, well, let me get more information first. And he gets all the information. I mean, on the bailout, he got information from a wide number of sources before he expressed an opinion on it. John McCain immediately, seat of the pants, there's his opinion. And frankly, in that respect, he's a lot like George W. Bush.
Well,
and I prefer I prefer presidents who take their time, gather up the information, figure out what's right to do, and then move forward, rather than someone who moves impulsively, possibly in the wrong direction.
I don't think he really gave anything.
You don't think he really did anything? You mean when he came to Washington?
He didn't give an opinion. He just said he
No, he didn't. He just ran to Washington.
That's
right.
It.
He just said, suspend the campaign. Run to D.C. Man the battleships. Fire. Fire.
Run to D.C. and do what?
Help be a leader and solve the world's problems.
That's
all hail McCain. Mission accomplished.
He used to run to the gold rush and there was nothing there.
You want to know the details, Kevin? We hadn't figured out the details yet. But he's running to save us. We need a hero. Hero doesn't take time to figure out what he's going to do before he does it.
We canceled the Republican convention over a thunderstorm.
That was something else. Right. Right. You know, one or two of these things might just be accident. All right, a hurricane happened on the first day. Fine. Okay. But then you look at the Palin choice. And then you look at this, canceling the debates. No president in American history. I mean, the modern debates date from 1960, from Kennedy-Nixon.
Yeah.
From 1960 to today, there have been arguments about the podiums and about the lights. I know Dukakis didn't want a to be dwarfed by the podium, which would have been unfair because he's shorter. Frankly, I've always thought if Obama could pull that trick on McCain, the same trick that George Bush Sr., because George Bush Sr., I think, is like 6'2", and Dukakis is like 5'8". And so Bush Sr. was saying, well, let's make sure that both podiums, are 5'6" tall. So, Obama's got the height advantage. He's about the reverse, actually. Obama's about 6'2", and John McCain's about 5'8". So he could – Obama won't play those games because he doesn't do that. But I mean, there have been fights over little things. But never once has a presidential candidate said, oh, I'm just canceling the debate.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
I remember back in
19- – He never wanted the debates to begin. He wanted to have town meetings, whatever that was.
Right. Which they're doing on the second night. I mean, this is the way, frankly, at this point we have a standard. For a while it was unclear in 60 and 76 and 80, but the last two debates, and correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe even three or four, I know in 2000 and in 04, and possibly in 96 as well, we've got it set now. There are three presidential debates. There's one vice presidential debate. The three debates tend to have, one where the moderator asks questions, one that's a town hall, and you know, one where they sit at the table and basically, you know, go at it. That's just sort of become the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And McCain is saying, emergency, no debate. And you know what? If there were a fire in Arizona, if there were, let's say, something coming before John McCain as chairman, let's say John McCain was chairman of the banking committee, all right? Not Chris Dodd, but John McCain. If John McCain were chairman of the banking committee or the leader of the Senate, majority leader, and then he said, you know what, I got to address this, I can't do a debate, I would agree with him. I would respect him. He'd be right. But he doesn't even sit on the committee. He doesn't even sit on the committee. He's no different than Tim Johnson, a Democrat from South Dakota who had a brain hemorrhage and, frankly, was out of the Senate for 9 months. All Tim Johnson does now, my understanding is, and I no disrespect to him, the man is ill, but he comes in occasionally and votes. And I'm glad he does. I appreciate that Kennedy still tries to make some votes despite his incredible health problems.
Yeah.
But that's all John McCain had to do here.
Yeah.
But he
does
wants
he
to be
sit on any committees.
What's that?
John McCain, does he sit on any?
Yeah, he sits on the Armed Services Committee. He sits on a lot of the foreign policy committees. As does Obama, also sits on the Foreign Services Committee. If there were an international incident, but he's not chairman. But if there were an international incident, even then, it might make some sense. But John McCain has said in his own words he doesn't know much about the economy. In fact, Monday of this week, my God, it seems like 1,000 years ago, but 3 days ago, 3 days ago, John McCain said the fundamentals of our economy are strong. And yesterday he said we faced the Great Depression. So the fundamentals of our economy are strong on Monday, and we faced the next Great Depression on Wednesday. Yikes. Was John McCain perhaps off on Monday? But that's my point. He's erratic. He swings from side to side. No, the fundamentals of our economy are not strong. But also, no, I don't think we faced the Great Depression either. It's somewhere in between. The economy is basically troubled. Yes, it's in trouble.
Well, the thing is, the question I have to ask America, why are the numbers so close between these two now?
Well, Obama's pulling away now, Kevin. I mean, you may still argue it's still too close, but the last 4 days have been very good.
By like 15, 20 points.
No, he never was. He never was. No. The most I've ever seen Obama ahead, ever, is 9 points. And that was this week in the Washington Post poll. I've never seen him ahead by double digits. I mean,
well,
in some states.
He should be.
Well, you know, Kevin, he's new. I mean, it could be racial, and I'm willing to accept that that's 5 or 10 points.
I think it most definitely is, Mark, and that's all it boils down to.
Well, you know, Bill Clinton was new in 92, and he beat George Bush in a landslide, but he was never ahead by 10 points. I think when you've got a new person on the scene, I think it's easier for an incumbent to win by 10 points. It's very hard for a challenger. I mean, I have to go back to maybe Franklin Roosevelt and Herbert Hoover to find a challenger really kicking the incumbent hard.
Especially this guy, the most hated president in history.
Well, that's true, but it's not running. I think if it were Obama and Bush, then I'm convinced it would be 20 points.
But especially a movie that's especially someone that's so hated, and the party's been so discredited that they're doing a movie while he's still president. W's coming
Kevin,
out in October.
You know, hated is a strong word. I have no doubt that 50% of Americans hate George Bush. Maybe even 55 think he's the worst president in American history, strongly opposed. But it's not 70%. I mean, the latest poll I've seen, and by the way, George Bush is the most disapproved president in American history, I'm proud to say. It's a weird thing to be proud about. But he has gone below Truman and below Nixon, the two lowest before. He's now at an approval rating of 19% and a disapproval rating of 76%. Now, that 76%, the strongly disapprove, is about 55 of that. 20% disapprove but don't strongly disapprove. And the 19%, But I have to say, that poll, while I'm glad to see it, is probably an outlier. There's probably a good quarter of Americans that still approve of the president. And a good 65% that are against and 10% who don't really follow it very clearly. But the point is that he's not running against Bush, and John McCain is desperately trying to trick Americans into thinking he's something different.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's like, I believe in change, not you, Obama.
Well, the thing is, all he has to say is, here's a guy who voted along with Bush over 90% of the time. How is he?
Well, he says that, and he said it in his wonderful speech in Denver, and he says it in his commercials. But I think that any time Americans want a change, there's two things. Yeah, they want to throw the old guys out, but they also want to know who the new guys are. I mean, you know, people didn't like Jimmy Carter, but they were a little afraid of Ronald Reagan, and it took them some time to get used to him. People didn't like George H.W. Bush, but wanted to find out who Bill Clinton was. Now, Bill Clinton, you know, won a very strong victory in 96, but 92, it took some time. I think at the end of the day, Kevin, I honestly don't care whether Obama wins 273 to 265 or 303. He could win 269 to 269 in a tie, which, by the way, I think is very possible if he loses New Hampshire and wins Colorado and loses Virginia and Ohio. He still wins. All Barack Obama needs is the Kerry states. Actually, forget the Kerry states. He needs the Gore states. The Kerry and the Gore states, we've talked about this before. The Kerry and the Gore states are identical except for New Hampshire, Iowa, and New Mexico. I'm convinced that Iowa and New Mexico are in the bag for Obama. So he holds the Kerry and Gore states, which includes Pennsylvania and Michigan, which are a little touchy, but I think he'll hold them. I think he'll get Iowa and New Mexico, and then he adds Colorado, which I think is going to happen, and bingo, he's won the election. He's got 269, it's a tie, it goes to the House, and we have more Democrats than they have Republicans in state delegations, we win. So at the end of the day, George Bush showed us that you could lose an election in 2000 and still be a formidable president. Now, I think he was a formidable president for wrong and for evil and for destruction of America, but there's no question that George W. Bush has had a profound imprint on American history, for good or for ill, and I think almost entirely for ill, even though Al Gore won the election, even though Al Gore won the popular vote, even though Al Gore won the electoral vote until it was taken away by the Supreme Court, it didn't matter that Bush lost the election, that more Americans preferred Gore than Bush. He still ruled strongly. So at the end of the day, my goal is to make Obama president of the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Would I love to see a landslide? Yeah, that'd make me feel good. But other than making me feel good, at the end of the day, that's not what counts.
Well, the thing is, what I'm more concerned with now, because I have a feeling Obama is going to squeak through. He's not, and as long as he does that, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I want to see a filibuster-proof Congress.
Yeah, now that I don't think is going to happen, but we're close. It is possible, and that's actually a great way to spend your time fighting, Kevin. It is possible for us to get 60. There are, I think, as I calculate it, we've got 55 for sure, which, by the way, is no small thing. We only have 51 now, and that includes Joe Lieberman. So moving it up to 55.
If we get 55, we can sacrifice Lieberman. We can isolate him and make him the pariah he deserves to be.
Well, right, and also on domestic issues, Lieberman's not a bad guy. He's terrible on foreign policy. He's an awful traitor to the Democratic Party. But, you know, if the vote's on privatizing Social Security, Lieberman's going to be a committed Democratic vote. In any case, 51 to 55 is nothing to sneeze at. Plus 4 is pretty good, and I think 55 is a bare minimum. Bare minimum. I think 56 or 57 are likely. I think 58 is possible, and 60 is an outside chance. If the economy continues to sink, if McCain continues to drive down in the polls, we have 4 states, and they're close. When I say 56, I'm not including Minnesota, where you have Al Franken running. I'm not including North Carolina. I'm not including Mississippi. I'm including the ones I know. I know in my home state of Virginia, there's no question Mark Warner is going to beat Gilmore. I know that in Alaska, interestingly enough, the Democrat will definitely win because Ted Stevens is on a corruption trial. Mm-hmm. Unless he's acquitted, and I don't think he will be, and even if he is, so I'm counting the ones that I'm sure to count. But we can win Minnesota. We can win North Carolina. We can win Mississippi. People are not very happy there. In fact, I would think a lot of Mississippians are mad about McCain in the debate. We can get 60. It is not out of the question, but I don't want you to think I think it's probable. I think we will end up with 56 or 57, and that's still very, very good. You know, with that, you can take somebody like Olympia Snowe. who is a moderate Republican. I disagree with her on some things, but she's definitely not a one of the Trent Lott Republicans. She can pull over and a few a few others. Here's what we can win. We can win Virginia. We'll definitely have it. Here, the only ones that are even close. The only ones are, we're going to win: Colorado, Alaska, New Jersey. We're going to win Virginia. The four Republican states we can win are North Carolina, Minnesota, Oregon, and Mississippi. If we win, and New Hampshire, if we win all of those, yeah, we have 60, and we can win in New Hampshire. Shaheen could beat Sununu. We can win in North Dakota. We can North Carolina. We can win in Minnesota. We can win in Oregon. Mississippi will be a little bit tougher. So I guess what I'm saying is it's not out of the question. You live in New York, Kevin, so probably you could do your most good in New Hampshire. I know that you think that's far, and it probably is.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about offline.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that another time. But
okay.
I just have one question to ask you.
Yeah.
And I haven't fully been educated on the particulars of this, of the bailout thing. What do you think about it? Overall,
well, heavy sigh is what I think about it.
exactly, because me, it's just
I'm not gonna. It would be easy to demagogue it and to say it's an awful, awful, awful thing. That's the easy thing to do. And yesterday I was hopping mad. Clearly, I detest the fact that people who did, like John McCain does, love to gamble, believe that if they win their gamble, they get to keep the money. If they lose their gamble, taxpayers pay off. I don't want to bail out anybody on Wall Street, not at one. I want to see those corporate execs living homeless underneath a bridge, and as I said yesterday, they can go to shelters, they can go to soup kitchens. I'm still a liberal, but they can get no more than your ordinary homeless person who's mentally ill and addicted to drugs. That's where I want to see them go. But on the other hand, I look at people I respect, and I do respect Barney Frank, and I do respect Chris Dodd. No, I have no respect for Bush or Paulson or anybody else. But listen, part of this is history. I know Barney Frank personally, and I've respected Chris Dodd for many years. If they believe that something is necessary for our economy, not to help the Wall Street people, but to help middle Americans get a loan for their cars, this is what Barney Frank, and he's given very detailed interviews, and I've listened to him for hours, trying, and I still don't know that I got it, but saying that because of the credit crunch, he fears that ordinary people won't be able to get the ordinary loans they need to go about ordinary lives. Car loans, small business loans, you know, mortgages for houses, even layaway plans in furniture stores that frankly lower middle class people really need. Not lower middle class, the middle class people use. If that's the case, and I haven't been convinced, but I haven't seen the information that I'm sure they've shown Barney, and they may be tricking him, but I Barney's a very smart guy. He was voted the most brilliant member of Congress. When he says that, I guess it makes me pause, and I guess it makes me not be quite so demagogic and say, look, I think we probably need something. And I look at Obama. I respect Obama. Obama's not saying kill the steal. Obama's saying what Barney Frank is saying, what Chris Dodd is saying. We need some sort of deal, but we need protection for taxpayers. We need to know there's an upside that we bail them out, but we get money back. We need to know there's good oversight. We need to know that there's no golden parachutes, that these executives are not profiting from this. And I look back to when Jimmy Carter bailed out Chrysler in the 1970s. And at the time, I was a little kid, but people were saying it was a terrible idea. And what happened? We loaned
money off of that, though.
That's exactly right. We loaned Chrysler the money, and 4 years later, we got it back with interest. I'll give you another example. Bill Clinton in Mexico. Bill Clinton loaned, I think it was like $50 billion, which seemed like a lot at the time, to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And people complained. The Republicans complained. Mexico cannot be trusted with their economy. You know, what's this Latin American country going to? And they paid it all back with interest. So as long as there's strict oversight, what I'd like to see, though, and this is, Kevin, where the devil really is in the details, I want to see less buying of these securities and more loaning of money. I don't mind loaning companies that I think will eventually pay us back for the overall good of the, I mean, fire the CEOs, make sure they suffer, but I understand that corporations are larger than the people who run them. I would punish all the people who run them strongly. But
well, also, the thing is, we have to make sure the CEOs suffer along with the workers, because Lee Iacocca, when we went Chrysler the money, he didn't take us out while the company was in debt.
He actually took, I think, a dollar a year was his salary. No.
I can't even get you on a subway.
but that was the point. That was the point, is that he put the interest of his company ahead of his personal interest, something that no one seems to be able to do on a Wall Street. It never should have happened. And this, I hope, will be a lesson for Republicans. I doubt it. But it's supposed to be a lesson, and the lesson is that regulation works. There's a reason for it. Yeah, you can be overregulated. Anything can be overregulated. But the idea is we have banks, and banks have to keep a certain reserve, and this dates back to the Great Depression. It's to prevent run-on banks. It's as old as FDR. It's as old as the New Deal. And these brokerage companies, well, they didn't have to follow the rules. They were, as I forget what was the name of that book, Masters of the Universe. What was it? That was Tom Wolfe, Bonfire of the Vanities. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You ever read that book, Kevin?
Oh, I've read it and seen the movie.
Ah, okay. It's a great book for anyone who hasn't read it. Very powerful book.
Yeah. But it was a movie with Tom Hanks, too.
Yes, it was. It was. And I read the book and saw the movie. I preferred the book. Yeah. But the heart of it is an investment trader like these people at Goldman Sachs, making hundreds of millions of dollars like our Treasury Secretary did, and thinking they're masters of the universe. They can do no wrong. They are so rich that at the end of the day, I mean, who can tell the difference between 200 million and 400 million? I can't. I mean, I can read the number. It's different. It's a different entry in the bank book. But
well,
is your lifestyle
doesn't
different?
Alter.
It can't. I mean, you own five small islands instead of three? You own six yachts instead of two? I mean, come on.
If it's 100 million and a billion, I don't think my lifestyle, well, if I bought a $15,000 shower curtain, like, what's his name, there may be.
But what do you need a $15,000? What? Tell me this. What does a $15,000 shower curtain do? Does it keep the water from going on the floor? Is it gold threads? What's in a $15,000? It's got embroidery?
It becomes bragging rights after a while.
Exactly. That's exactly right,
Kevin.
It ain't about the thing. It's about, I am so rich that I can waste my money on frivolous things. And you know what? When you become so rich that you can waste your money on frivolous things, then maybe you're just too rich.
It's time to give it away, like Robin Williams said.
I agree 100%. I agree
100%,
Mark. We have a call on line 2 from Sweden.
Okay, Kevin,
well,
thank you for your time.
I'm going to let you go, Mark, and
okay.
I'll contact you soon, okay?
Terrific. Thanks very much for calling. Let's go to Scott. Sorry to keep you on hold, Scott. Scott, welcome from Sweden.
Greetings, Mark.
Greetings.
I think that I'm on, right? You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Talk to me.
Okay, how are you doing? You're talking about the Lee Iacocca's bailout?
Yes.
Of when you got bailed out in Chrysler. Did you ever hear the old song, I'm Changing My Name to Chrysler?
I'm sorry?
Tom Paxton? Have you heard that? Dig it out. All you Tom Paxton.
I may have a little trouble understanding your accent. I'm sorry. I speak a little bit more slowly. Have I ever heard of
It's an Ohio accent, but that's I've only been in Sweden 25 years, so maybe I'm adopting.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Have I ever heard of what?
I was just thinking, you got me thinking of the old Tom Paxton song, like Changing My Name to Chrysler. I mean, it's a jovial kind of comedy. Never mind. It's all over.
Sorry, it's probably before my time.
You're young.
I'm even younger than Barack Obama. But anyway, so what's on your mind about this?
I would basically call that to point out that things look like they're really looking up at the moment for getting rid of Papa McCain.
You think he's looking up for McCain?
No, that he called off his campaign. They got Palin on hold and hiding her away. I mean, the American people, they must be laughing themselves silly at this old fart by now.
Well, I think many of them are. I mean, this whole debate fiasco. You know, look, I hope, you know, I kind of hope the bill isn't done until Monday, because I want Barack Obama to be standing there in Oxford, Mississippi, with a, you know, in front of the podium. And I'm going to have a blank podium on the other side. He'll say, well, John McCain didn't show up. Ask me your question. You know?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
do it.
This guy is his own Ringling Brothers Circus, this McCain. I mean, people here are in Sweden laughing their butts off at that old guy. They're like, they keep asking, what is it with the U.S.? Who is this McCain? Who is this Palin? I mean, people just roll their eyes.
Right, but to Scott, in Sweden, people have recognized that George Bush and the Republicans are failures for a very long time. Americans are just afraid to come around.
Reagan was a failure, but that message never sunk in back in the States at the time.
Yeah, well, Americans have been a little slow. I mean, compared to Sweden, the Democratic Party is far right wing, I'm sure.
Anyway, I'm thinking about this bailout as well. And I hear all of this doom and gloom. I was listening to the podcast of Bob yesterday, and Ben Burtt sounded like he's about to turn survivalist and, you know, telling people to dig in shelters and hide out for 20 years. Pretty gloomy stuff. And I don't think the situation necessarily has to be as gruesome and as dire as the fears can be. You know, I'm kind of reminded that FDR is the only have one thing to fear, and that's fear itself.
And that's a very good point, Scott, and one that I've been thinking about. And honestly, if it weren't Barney Frank and Chris Dodd, but people that I didn't know as well, I have to admit, I fully admit, I'm basing some of my qualified, and it's very qualified, support based on the fact that I trust these two men, but not anything I've specifically seen. And I'm still very, very skeptical about all of this. Scott, if you'll hang on with me, I'm going to be going into Bob Kincaid's show for the next 3 hours. So hang on. You got 4 hours of Mark tonight. Bob is gone, but I'm filling in. I hope everyone will stick around as I fill in for Bob, because we have a lot to talk about the bailout and the political campaign and whatever's on your mind. So if you'll hang on with me, Scott, I'm going to sign off right now here on the Inside Scoop and come back in just a moment as a substitute for our favorite hillbilly elitist. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
Please stay tuned, because we'll be right back with a live show and guest